This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another episode of Rank and File. The 4th of July, fireworks, grilling out on the barbecue, swimming in the pool, going fishing. These are the things of summer that everyone knows. But for wrestling fans, there's another summer thing. It's SummerSlam time. We are in August, the hot, hot month of August. And we're going to be talking about SummerSlam tonight. If this is your first time ever listening to Rank and File, let me tell you what it is. Let me tell you who I am. My name is Jordan Duncan. I am the host of Rank and File. And every month, we have a different topic. Today, it's SummerSlam. And we bring in a panel of guests, and we do a top 10 list. We each reveal our list one by one, starting with number 10, going all the way down to number 1. And I keep track of all of them along the way. We keep score, and we give out some awards at the end of the night. So let's bring in our guests. A couple of them you may know because they've been on here before. One guy's been on, I think, more episodes of this show than I have. We'll get to him in just a second. First, making his Rank and File debut. I said it's hot here. I'm in Michigan. Coming to us from the hot, sweaty state of Georgia. It's Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, welcome to Rank and File.
I hate summer, man.
I bet. I used to summer in Georgia. We used to vacation in Georgia every summer because I have family down there, and it's a different kind of hot down there.
It's like when you walk out, you just hear like feel a sheet of heat just hit you.
I bet. But how hot is it down there today?
It's like 92, 93.
Yeah, but the
humidity, it's so humid.
Yeah, that southern 92 is different. Bad.
But I mean, when I think of summer myself, I think of Hog Wild and Dennis Rodman getting slammed into a porta potty by Randy Savage.
That's true, and that's why you are one of the co-hosts of Where the Big Boys Play. So
see how I tied that in there.
I do see that. Nice plug. Speaking of the big boys, let's bring in our big Canadian boy, making his second appearance on Rank and File, I believe. I know he's on our Christmas episode. I don't think he's been on anything else. He'll tell us in just a second. It's Aaron George. Aaron, come on. What's up?
I don't see why we brought up all these summer things and left Canada Day out.
That's a good point.
Like, it's huge up here.
Really?
Huge.
When is it?
July 1st.
It takes him 8 seconds to think of what month it is. Aaron, I know you were on our Christmas episode.
We did the characters, yeah.
That's the only time you've been on Rank and File, correct?
It's the only time I've had the honor of hearing your sweet voice.
Except for all the other shows we're on together.
Like, yes, once there's a month, those. Basically.
Speaking it's crazy. Of crazy this show's been going on since Christmas.
Oh, before Christmas. That was episode two or three, man.
I can't believe we haven't pulled the plug yet.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't think Justin knows about it yet. So that's
the
secret.
Scott's like 6 months sleeping.
Behind. Yeah. Scott just figured out between the sheets, so he's about 12,000 hours behind before he's going to figure this thing out. So. Don't tell him, all right? But speaking of guys who know everything about every podcast, because I think he is contractually obligated to be on 90% of all podcasts, making his 50th appearance on Rank and File, it's Ben Morse. Ben, welcome back.
You know, after our heated feud on the Crisscross, hosted by Aaron George, it took a lot for me to come on this Mark Jordan Duncan show again, but I knew credibility was needed. I do what I do for the people and for the Republic. Good to be back, Jordan.
The Republic of China, because he's a communist.
So there's nothing wrong with that. They have a lot of really cool ideas about the free market.
You know, I've been there. It's one of the few places in the world I've been, and the free market over there is not as booming as you'd imagine it to be.
Oh, you're shooting down all my red dreams.
So to our Chinese overlords who are listening, thank you for downloading Rank and File. Please don't kill us all. So, guys, so we're going to talk SummerSlam tonight. Before we get into the topic, there's a cool podcast that I would encourage people to go out and check out. It's called Lucha Undead.
PTBN Rewind.
PTBN Rewind, which I believe is still around. Maybe Justin and Scott thought that was my show, and that's why that one hasn't appeared for a while.
It's on life support. We haven't pulled the plug yet.
Well, you know, you never know. I mean, things could happen. Maybe if you would have won that episode of Crisscross, you would have gotten a little bit more cachet. But, you know. So anyways, Lucha Undead Podcast is a pretty fun show, and they're doing this series, and I know Chad was on one, and I was on one, and Justin's on one, where they're interviewing the Place to Be mainstays and kind of calling them, we're calling them shoot interviews. They don't call them that. We do.
Brad's only calling it that, to be, be clear.
So just to kind of steal their thunder a little bit, guys, I want to hit you with a personal question before we get started.
Aaron,
how big should Trump's wall be?
Oh, God, like the wall in Game of Thrones, obviously.
All right.
It's 700 feet high.
Cool. All right, cool. I wanted to ask you that because, you know, as a Canadian, you can give some outside perspective. So, Ben.
Yeah, I don't think you want that.
No, I don't think we do either. That's why I went right to Ben. Ben, if you could punch anyone from the PWO, why would it be Parv?
Who?
Yes, exactly. Man, this Lucha Undead stuff's easy. All right.
And what?
Yeah. Chad, which Pokemon would you be?
Oh, I am turning 30 in about 2.5 hours, guys. And Pokemon is a time that has passed me by. I was at Ruby Falls this weekend. Everybody in the line was playing Pokemon.
Yeah, true story. I was actually at the mall tonight with my kids, and they play Pokemon. I play it sort of. I don't really know the names of a lot of them and stuff, but I, you know, because my son doesn't have a phone, so he has to play on my phone anyways. And they took a gym, which is a thing, and then they're like, "Someone else took the gym. Let's get it back." And I'm like, "I don't even know what's happening." And then they started talking about how someone joined their gym. And this random man in his 40s said, "Well, that was me," and starts chatting it up with my kids. And I'm like, "All right, don't think I like this game anymore. Let's go, boys." Oh, yeah.
In line, there was a 25-year-old hipster in front of me and a 10-year-old Indian boy behind me that were fighting with each other over Pokemon and Pikachus.
There's
it was ridiculous. Yeah, it was bringing everybody together, I guess. But.
And tearing them apart, apparently.
So I think we're in agreement that Chad probably gave the worst answer because he didn't even give an answer.
Just started ranting about his own mortality. He's younger than all of us.
2.5 hours
closer
to death. Speaking of
when he said I'm almost 30, I cried inside.
Yeah, my heart broke.
Yeah, I'm almost done with my 30s at this point. Well, hey, you know what's kind of cool? We might be here well into Chad's birthday, so
that's the plan.
It's Runa's birthday,
right? So, I think we're going to get a lot of those Chad Campbell sighs tonight, which is exactly why I wanted him on the show. So, but for real, Chad, I've been wanting you to appear on Rank and File for quite a while, but your side business that we discussed off air, and I'll tell you about it, is probably what has precluded you from appearing thus far. So. Guys, we are talking SummerSlam. I already made that part known. Let's talk about what we are talking about, and that is our SummerSlam performers. We're going to talk about our favorite SummerSlam performers collectively over the years. We're going to look at different bodies of work and things like that. We kind of did a Royal Rumble-themed podcast about this as well. Todd Weber and Justin were on that one. And Aaron, you did a huge SummerSlam project last year. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? So if anyone's in the SummerSlam spirit, they might want to go and read up on that and catch up a little bit.
Sure. I mean, you can go back and check it out. I called it the scientific ranking of SummerSlams, which was just me being an asshole by using the word science. What I basically did was I actually rewatched all of them, like from 88 to 2014, and I ranked the matches from one. I think there was 214 matches, and then like match number one got 214 points, number two 213, all the way down to match 214 that got 1 point, and I ranked the SummerSlams based solely on that. On that ranking. And it was a lot of fun. And I did a bunch of other stuff too. I talked about like who was the best dressed and stuff like that. You know, real stuff, you know. It gave me a really surprising winner that upset a lot of people. and a really surprising loser, like the last Reich SummerSlam that really upset some people too. So I feel like I was creative and upset people.
That's really what we aim for here at Rank and File.
That's all I aim for in life.
With every episode, yeah. So did having that kind of database help you with this top 10 list?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of went about it very similarly. Like, cool. I looked at it, and I based it on their matches, and everybody, like, for me, like, they had to have wrestled 5 matches to, like, even get considered.
Sure.
And I figured everyone else would kind of be basing more on, not on that, so I figured I'd go all in on that, mm-hmm. so that at least I'd be a little different.
And then one more question there. What was the 214th match?
Undertaker.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't sound surprising
God
at all.
Damn
I don't
it.
Think I don't think that one upset anybody except no, for you because you had to watch it again. So
again, yeah.
All right. So Ben,
yes, sir.
Tell us some things that Aaron could have done that would have been time better spent than watching every SummerSlam again.
Watching every Hog Wild would have gone much quicker.
Yeah, much quicker. That's next month's topic.
Watching the movie Wild Hogs. Yeah. Would also have probably been a better use of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just anything involving hogs that are wild.
You could play some Red Dead Redemption, hunt some hogs. Well, I think they're boars, so.
Sure. I could have raised my children.
Yeah, nah, you know.
I didn't put that on the list.
You're married.
Yeah.
it's a partnership deal, so. Chad. Before we get into our SummerSlam list, who's your top Hog Wild performer?
Top Hog Wild performer.
We can include Road Wild into that as well.
Oh,
really mix things up.
That brings in a whole different caveat there. God, I don't even know who would be the top Hog Wild. There were some awful pay-per-views.
Wasn't there only one Hog Wild? Wasn't it just
I think 97 was still Hog Wild too, right?
No, it was only Hog Wild 96.
Oh, wow.
And it's Road Wild from then on out.
I know.
I'm kind of a WCW expert, Chad.
Excuse me. Well, who would be your top Hog Wild performer? Probably, it honestly, may be Thou Who Shall Not Be Named,
yeah,
because
right.
I like the Malenko match in 96.
Yeah.
It would have to be Harlem Heat. The crowd loved him.
They love them.
Oh, yeah.
Big, perfect big crowd. Fans. Big fans.
Racist bikers.
But, I mean, you know, everybody puts Stevie Ray at the top of their list when they're making best of. So I was hoping for something a little outside the box.
Should have done him and Vincent for the battle of the NWO Black and White at Road Wild 99 instead of Vincent.
Know your audience, WCW.
Yeah.
So.
See, if he was building a wall, your whole nation would be behind it.
Oh, my gosh. So before we offend anybody else, maybe we should get into our list. Again, we are doing our top SummerSlam performers. And since we got 3 guys on instead of 2, I did not come up with my own list. I'm just going to kind of chime in, mock your answers if I think they're bad, politely give some golf claps if I think they're good, and, you know, keep score and stuff like that. So why don't we kick things off with our number 10s? You know, actually, before that, anybody have any honorable mentions you want to give some love to? Anything that any guys or ladies that just missed the cut? Ben, you got anyone?
I stuck to 10 on this one, Jordan.
All right, cool.
I played by the rules.
Good. I appreciate it. Aaron, how about you?
I broke the rules.
Okay.
I have 2 honorable mentions. One, you guys might have him later, is Rey Mysterio was an honorable mention for me. I couldn't put him on my list because of the god-awful series with Chavo.
Ooh.
Right in the middle of the 2000s. It just killed him for me. And my other honor, but the rest of his resume is quite good. I find he has a lot of little like sneaky, decent matches on kind of forgettable cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one on my list who I wish he would have done more was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay.
Like I couldn't put him on. He's only has 4 matches, but like everything's pretty good.
Wow, he's only got 4 SummerSlam matches?
Yeah.
That's kind of surprising.
Unless you count the Yokozuna one, but I didn't.
Yeah, I only counted 4.
And even if you did, that probably wouldn't help his cause.
No.
No.
All right, how about you, Chad? Anybody that just missed the cut?
I ended up with a short list of 13, but my number 11 was Razor Ramon. And he actually only had 3 matches, but he had the ladder match in 95, which, sure, as we'll discuss in the podcast, I think it's a top 5 SummerSlam match of all time. I really like the Diesel match in 94. And then even the Ted DiBiase match at 93, I watched that today. I mean, it's okay, but it is DiBiase's last U.S. match, period, mm-hmm, which is, you know, kind of historic for somebody that was – Yeah, I mean, he was a big player in the 80s and early 90s, so he just didn't have enough meat, but his three performances at SummerSlam I thought were all good to very good.
Cool. Far more historic to that guy that Ben wants to punch, Parv, Ted DiBiase's last match. So.
Yes, yes.
But all right, let's get into our number 10s. You guys know the drill, and Chad, I know you've never been on the show, but it's not hard to figure out. We just all share our numbers, and if you've got somebody, you know, if Aaron's number 10 happens to be your number 2, you don't have to share your thoughts on him just yet. Just let us know you'd like to talk about him a little later. But if it's your number 9 or your number 8 and you just don't want to wait around too long for someone that didn't rank too highly, we'll just talk about it now. We'll give everybody a chance to discuss, debate, and agree or disagree. So, Ben, you are the veteran here. Why don't you kick things off with your number 10, man?
All right. My number 10 is none other than CM Punk. Hmm. I have him on there on the strength of the Summer of Punk, which, even though it didn't turn out quite how we all hoped it would, did kind of climax at SummerSlam. That was with the where the big match with Cena happened for the two belts, and that was kind of the logical end of the story. He had a great match with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, and also kind of an underrated classic feud with Jeff Hardy ended at SummerSlam. So I had CM Punk not necessarily having that many matches, but doing a lot and making some memorable moments in what he did do.
Sure. Yeah, that Brock match... maybe the best.
That's one of my favorites.
Maybe
ever.
The best match on one of the best SummerSlams.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Aaron. What do you think about CM Punk?
Well, he would be my number 8.
Okay.
So I might as well just talk about him now because I don't care too much about him. Don't want, you know, I don't want to upset anybody or offend anyone.
Hot take.
I know, right? But I think that match with Cena at 11 is kind of criminally underrated. I think it gets compared to the Money in the Bank match, which obviously you would, but I think it's almost as good, and I really love that match. And it's funny, we talked about his match with Lesnar, like, it obviously one of the greatest matches in the history of SummerSlam, but it's almost scary that it's not necessarily the best match on that show.
Right.
And then, I mean, he's got his other stuff, too. I mean, like, the ladder match with Hardy's good. John Morrison and JBL matches were okay. And even his, like, his weaker stuff is, I don't know, it's not the worst. So he's my number 8. I like the guy. I wish he'd come back. Apparently I'm butthurt. Go ahead.
No, yeah, you make a good point, though, that as great as the Brock match is, depending on who you're talking to or even what mood you're in, you may not even think it's the best match on the card with Cena and Daniel Bryan on there as well, so...
We didn't bring up his handicap match against the Big Show with the rest of the Straight Edge Society.
Yeah, another all-time great one. So.
Well, I think his worst match is that triple threat with Cena and Big Show. It's just dead. Like, it's just dead, and it makes no sense considering the year before he had such an awesome match with Cena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chad, you want to weigh in on CM Punk?
I will weigh in on Mr. Punk later.
All right. Chad already skirting the issue.
Good. Classic Chad.
Yeah, classic Campbell. Well, Chad, we're going to make you talk now. Why don't you give us your number 10 then?
I will talk about my number 10 a little bit later.
All right.
My number 10, when I made this list, I found it interesting that I thought there wasn't too many guys that were consistent or had longevity, really. I thought it was either one or the other, where there was guys with big peaks or guys that may have had a lot of appearances with one or two really good matches, call it The Undertaker, but a lot of garbage too. Mm-hmm. So my number 10, I went with Edge. Now, I don't think Edge had – in my mind, he had one great match, and that was the Undertaker Hell in a Cell from 2008. But he was in some other good stuff. I mean, I do the 2010 SummerSlam, I did a rewind on that a long time ago, probably in 2013 or 14. And that's a pretty dreadful show. The main event is the best match of that show, but, you know, that's not saying a whole lot, but it's still a good match. I like the match versus Cena in 2006. I love the feud versus Matt Hardy in 2005, and even though their match at SummerSlam wasn't as good as the cage match, I still thought it was very intense and a good kind of sub-10-minute match. And then I actually watched the Lance Storm match and Eddie Guerrero matches today, and I found both of them to be really good, especially Lance Storm, who is somebody I usually do not enjoy much at all. I thought that was a really strong match and a really strong Edge performance in that match. And then when you include his inclusion in TLC, that's why he kind of landed on number 10. Not a lot of blowaway great stuff, but I didn't think he had any stinkers throughout his multiple SummerSlam performances.
Yeah, Edge is definitely a guy that I wouldn't jump to the top to the top of my mind, but when you start listing all those guys that he's faced at SummerSlam, I'm like, wow, yeah, that's a pretty impressive resume there. And you know, some of those matches I would have to probably rewatch to remember the details of them, but I don't remember not liking pretty much anything you listed there. And the TLC one's kind of hard to give Edge credit for, but, I mean, he was in it, you know, so you can't discredit him for it, you know? So,
right.
Ben, what do you think about Edge?
Edge, if I had done honorable mentions, Edge would have been right there. He was just on the outside looking in for me. I actually really have a soft spot for his Undertaker match with the Hell in the Cell, with the crazy ending and everything. So that, to me, is kind of his signature match. But Chad mentioned a lot of the kind of just solid mid-card stuff he was doing in the early to mid-2000s. So I think it's a good choice. It's a credible choice, and could have very easily been on my list. But he's not. Okay. So suck it.
Aaron, Edge is a Canadian-born man. Is he on your list?
No.
Wow.
Okay. No. But for me, it's just because for me he's just middle of the road.
Okay.
And he does have a couple. I'd love to echo Chad's thoughts on the Matt Hardy match. Like, people kind of shit on that match, but like it's pretty fast and intense and completely different than anything else on that show. I like the Undertaker match. When I watched the Guerrero match from 2002, I had some issues with it, but it was mainly because of I think it's his shoulder selling. I remember I watched them all in a lump, right? So like, but I remember him getting the shit kicked out of his shoulder and then using the spear a bunch of times, and that bugged me about it. But yeah, like everything's pretty good.
Sure. Yeah, that's a pretty good synopsis of Edge's run there. I believe, Ben, did we not do a rewind on SummerSlam 2002?
Did we? Yeah, no, I did a rewind on SummerSlam 2002.
I'm pretty sure I was there with you.
I don't know if you were there.
I'm pretty sure I was, because I remember talking about Eddie Guerrero and Edge. You know, I think it would be a cool podcast. I wouldn't want to be the one to do it because my memory is certainly not the best. But somebody like who has an extensive knowledge, I think with talking about Edge and Matt Hardy, I think it'd be cool to rank the top sub 10-minute matches, you know, in history. Because that'd be a really cool experiment to look at really, really good short matches. Cause some come to mind, but I wouldn't want to be the guy to do it. So, Chad, I'm volunteering you to start that project.
No, you're sounding like Brad now.
So while you're listening, if you want to click on that Amazon link.
Yeah. With your morning cup of coffee, you can read my thoughts on the sub-10-minute matches. No. Glenn Butler, Jordan Duncan, and Nate Milton joined Ben for the 2002 Rewind.
Oh, okay, cool.
Wow. Thanks.
That was a really good episode. Around. So good that I just remembered I was on it. So.
Yeah.
thank you, Justin, for indexing all this stuff 2.5 years after we started the website.
I think making the job of doing it next to impossible.
Yeah. Is this the second Chad Shoot interview? Is this what this is turning into? All right, so Aaron, why don't you give us your number 10?
Sure. My number 10 is someone who is extremely, like, whenever you talk about influence and stuff, he always comes up, especially in the early days. And my number 10 is Hulk Hogan.
Oh, okay.
I am unabashedly a huge fan of his match with Michaels in 05. I think it's like one of the, maybe the best, for me, the best Hulk Hogan formula match I've ever seen. In terms of like, how the flow of the match works. And his tag matches with Savage and then with Beefcake were the Savage one was much better than the Beefcake one because Zeus was involved in the other one. But I like both of those, and his match and feud with Quake was really good. And I really enjoyed just like how much he helped. I mean, he helped put WWF on the map, but again, he helped build those early SummerSlams, and that's why he comes in at number 10 for me.
Yeah, I think you could say that about pretty much every main show. He helped build the SummerSlams and WrestleManias and Survivor Series. And
wrestling.
So, but yeah, I mean, Hogan was a guy that I wondered where he would rank on our list because early SummerSlams, obviously, he was the focal point. And I think he gets crapped on a lot on the internet, but I don't think he's as bad as people say that he is. Not to say that he's the best in the world, but I think when you look at Hulk Hogan matches, they might be better than you remember them. Chad, what do you think about Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, when I did my research, he was on my kind of list to look into. Mm-hmm. For me, he just didn't have that kind of one like great match that stuck out to me. I think there's some good stuff there. The Earthquake match and the HBK match I both like a good deal. And the Mega Bucks versus Mega Powers match is also good. But not a huge fan of the No Holds Barred tag. And the match made in Hell was a fitting title for what they delivered in SummerSlam 91.
Yeah, that's probably Hogan's biggest drawback is when he stunk pretty bad. You know, his stuff that stinks worse than maybe some other guys who will be on our list. But, Ben, did he make your list?
I am going to break from the pack and say that I had him a lot higher, so okay, I'm going to wait to talk about him then.
Well, that's why I thought he was an interesting choice, because I could see the argument for putting him really high on the list. I could see the argument for leaving him off completely, you know. I think with Hogan matches, maybe different than, you know, I don't know, like Rey Mysterio was mentioned in an honorable mention. We remember maybe the moments more than, you know, the greatness of the match. Like, when I think of Hogan at SummerSlam, I think of hitting Zeus with the brick and the purse, you know, and Elizabeth's revealing.
So cheating. Yeah. You think of cheating.
Yeah, I think of how much Hulk Hogan was a cheater and needed women's help during matches, basically. So. But does that make sense? You know, like, I remember the moments more than the matches with Hogan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. I mean, even in the Earthquake match, him slamming that little stool like up against Earthquake's back, sure, and the big lumps on Earthquake's back.
His back.
Yeah.
So, okay, cool. So there's our number 10s. Aaron, why don't you just keep things going and give us your number 9 as well?
Sure. My number 9 is another Canadian. Mm. And it's weird because usually I hate
Dino
most
Bravo.
Dino Bravo. Did he never even fought at one, eh?
Well, he's still good enough to make the list.
Yeah, he's so good.
His influence was felt on many SummerSlams.
Probably my favorite Canadian wrestler of all time. And my number 9 is Chris Jericho.
Okay.
He's not someone that springs to mind in terms of like that one match, but I think his consistency is really quite staggering. For me, his best match is probably the one with Benoit at 2000. But I remember when I rewatched 2005, I really dug the match with John Cena. It was that first time that the crowd turned on him so viciously. But the match itself was also very strong. And even in his return, I liked his matches with Ziggler. He's strong in the chamber, even though that match has major flaws. Even something as silly as him and Edge and Batista. Like, it was a nice high spot on that weird 2004 card.
Oh, the triple threat, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got some lows. He fights Crime Time at one point. He fights Bray Wyatt in a pretty big stinker, but I think he's really consistent. So that's why he's number 9.
Yeah, Jericho's definitely got some consistency to him. Is he booked? Is he got a match booked for this year's SummerSlam already? Or
yeah,
who's
he? Yeah, he's with teaming with Owens against Enzo and Cass.
Oh wow, okay.
I
did not watch Raw from this past week yet, so I knew
shame
he had an interaction with Enzo from the week before, so okay, that's interesting. All right, Chad, what do you think about Chris Jericho?
Once again, he was on kind of my little list of guys I wanted to dig into. For me, with Jericho, I kind of, like, in my mind, I saw him as sort of a poor man's Edge when I compared them together. Mm-hmm. I do agree that Jericho was consistent a decent amount throughout his SummerSlam performances, but I don't like the match versus Rhino. I think that's a real sloppy affair. The match versus Flair is meh. And then the crime stuff is just, you know, it is what it is. And I didn't like the match with Bray that much either. So he kind of didn't even I had, like I said, 13 that I had on my short list of my list of honorable mentions, and he didn't crack that. But I can see it because I do like the Benoit stuff and the Cena match, but just not enough for me.
Sure. You know, it's funny you mentioned the Rhino match because that match, for me, I used to really, really, really love Jericho back from his WCW days, more his character than his matches, and that kind of transitioned over into his WWF, WWE run, and I loved him a lot, but he was really sloppy and sometimes just outright bad, and I remember that Rhino match having kind of like a moment of clarity and saying, why do I like this guy so much? You know, and like, but that was like a moment when it turned, and I've kind of changed my mind since then, and he's won me back over, but there was a point where I used to really love him, then it changed to a point where I just couldn't stand him, and it's kind of come back to where now I enjoy his work again.
I do want to say real quickly too with Jericho, like, I can honestly think that his best performance is not even in a match at SummerSlam, and that's 2008 when he punches Whisper in the mouth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty memorable.
Which I did consider, so that was a plus for him in my evaluation.
Not surprising that Chad Campbell advocates for the abuse of women to boost his ranking.
Yes. Here we go.
Put her in her place.
I'm going to award 5 bonus points to Chris Jericho. Ben, did Chris Jericho make your list?
No, Chris Jericho did not make my list. I can see Aaron's argument, the consistency thing, because he is a performer who's been in WWE for so long. Even if he's taken breaks, he's had so many matches. But I'll actually point out the one thing. Chad had a good point with mentioning the 2008 performance. I would also go so far as to mention the 1999 performance, which was, I think, just like his second appearance in WWF. He came out and mocked the Road Dog and did all that. That was pretty memorable as well.
Lugubrious.
Yes. But no, he didn't make my list.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, there's definitely I think there's a lot of big names that may just get one of the three of you to list them, and that's what 10, 9, 8, 7 spots are usually reserved for. So, Ben, why don't you keep things going? Give us your number 9.
Sure. My number 9 is the Olympic hero, appropriate for this time, Kurt Angle. Hmm. Based mostly on the strength of a run of 3 or 4 matches. That would be starting in 2001 with his great match against Steve Austin, going into 2002 where he had the classic opener against Rey Mysterio, 2003 had a rematch from WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar, and then 2004 had another WrestleMania rematch with Eddie Guerrero. I think those are 4 just really solid matches. The Austin match, in my mind, is an all-time classic. The Mysterio match is maybe the best SummerSlam opener, and then 2 really consistent matches with Brock and with Eddie. He didn't, you know, have, I don't know about delivering all-time SummerSlam moments like you were talking earlier with Hogan about the moments, but just one of the best wrestlers in SummerSlam history, even if it is only for 4 matches. Because I didn't really consider the triple threat with Hunter and Brock in 2000 kind of bland, and then the 2005 match with Eugene is better left untouched. So that's my number 9.
Yeah, definitely. So, Aaron, weigh in on our Olympic gold medalist.
I would like to weigh in on him later, if that's all right.
All right, that is more than all right. Chad?
To be perfectly honest, looking at my list, I think I might have had him too low.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that SummerSlam comes to mind for me because I really love the Mysterio match. And I know that I'm in the minority. I actually think I like the Eddie match better than the WrestleMania match. And I know that is not the popular opinion. So, Chad, he's your number 1, correct?
Well, he's not my number 1, but I would like to discuss him later.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Oh. Interesting. The Olympics have touched Chad's heart.
I'm telling you what, this list is a contradiction of my greatest wrestler ever list, I can tell you.
Well, it's funny because, like, there's so many guys that, like, just didn't wrestle that many SummerSlam matches.
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My membership from PWO is being revoked as we speak when I submitted this list.
You're probably not going to be hyping this episode up to them.
No. This is not making it into the shilling forum there.
We'll just, in text form, we'll just call you Brad Campbell. Well, Chad, why don't you bury yourself a little bit further and give us your number 9?
This is funny that it's this guy that I'm talking about right after that. I don't know where he'll end up on other lists, but my number 9 is Shawn Michaels.
Okay.
And Shawn Michaels is somebody in compiling this list that I wrestled with more than anybody else that I listed. Because I love some of his performances at SummerSlam, and I absolutely hate some of his performances at SummerSlam. So that's where he landed there. I mean, just to go over the resume, I think the 6-man tag in 89 is really good. In 90, Power and Glory match, he's a non-entity. He's injured, so he's out there. I actually really like the Rick Martel, You Can't Punch Our Face match at SummerSlam 92. I think that's a really fun mid-card match, and plus you get to see Sherry's butt cheeks, so that's always a plus. The Mr. Perfect match at 93 I think is really disappointing. Just a downer. And then I talked about it in my honorable mention, but the ladder match with Razor Ramon at SummerSlam 1995, I guess I can reveal now, that is my number 3 SummerSlam match of all time.
Wow.
I think it's the best ladder match in WWE history. So I'm a big, big fan of that. Love that match. The match versus Vader at SummerSlam 96, I rewatched that recently when I went through all of 1996. And while it's not maybe the match of the year blow-away match that they could have had or you might have thought they had, and Shawn was unprofessional for sure at certain moments in this match, I do think it's a great match overall. I ended up ranking it at 4 stars and thought it was really strong kind of throughout a bunch of junk going on throughout the match. The match versus Triple H at 2002, I guess we can discuss that later, probably. And then you got the Elimination Chamber and Hogan and the stuff with teaming with DX that I did not like and didn't help his case. So that's kind of where I landed at number 9. Some absolute classic stuff, but also a good bit of stinkers for me.
You know, that Vader match, I think, kind of addresses an interesting way to look at things is, you know, how much the booking of a match affects how good we think it really was. Because really, it wasn't that the match that they performed badly; it's just that it was really dumb the way that they booked it and what they ended up doing, you know,
right,
with that match. So, I think Chad spoiled his number 1. If seeing butt cheeks is enough to put somebody on the list, Rikishi may be pretty high on this one. So, guys, are we going to both be talking about Shawn Michaels a little bit later on?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do it a bit later for me.
Okay, cool. I had a feeling there. So that's our number 10 and our number 9. Aaron, we already got your number 8. That's CM Punk.
Yep.
So, Chad, why don't you just keep things going on your side of things?
My number 8 is a guy that I kind of thought was underrated until I started looking at his case. And then I was like, yeah, I can't really put him any lower than number 8, and that's Christian. Has the TLC, which again, you know, it's tough to pinpoint on one certain individual in a match like that with stuff going on, but I mean, he certainly helped to make that match memorable. So you got to give him credit there. The Young Americans versus Booker T and Goldust match is, I mean, it is what it is. It's not bad, though. But I really like the both the Randy Orton match in 2011 and the Alberto Del Rio match in 2013. I thought both of those were a good kind of culmination to those feuds, really helped stabilize the mid-card on those shows and helped elevate both of those SummerSlams overall. And so that's kind of where I landed on Christian. I thought he had two really, really good matches, and then the TLC as well.
Yeah, I feel like that the 2013 match with Del Rio, it's like the forgotten great match from that show, because the two big matches that everyone else talks about, you know, the Brian Cena,
right,
and Brock and Punk. But that was a really, really good match. for both guys, you know. So, Ben, do you want to talk about Christian?
I have nothing to say about Christian. I did not even consider him.
Wow. Okay. Scalding review.
He is nothing to me.
Okay. Holy cow.
But no, Chad makes good points.
Aaron, how about you? Do you have anything to say about Christian?
Yeah, I thought he didn't make my list, but I thought if I had made a 13 as well, he would be in that bottom three. Okay. And it's based almost entirely on the strengths of the two matches you guys just talked about. Like, that Del Rio match would be the best match on a lot of SummerSlams.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just buried behind, for me, arguably two of the best matches of all time at SummerSlam, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love this. I love the selling in that match. I love the way Del Rio uses his kicks. I just think it's very smart. And the Orton match is like the perfect culmination of their feud. It's like all of their matches up until that point put into one and then improved upon, which I really liked. He didn't make my list, but I kept thinking in the back of my head he just didn't do enough. And maybe I was wrong. But
I think that sums up Christian, you know, kind of how a lot of fans view him. Like, it's like, yeah, nah. You know, that's a pretty good synopsis of Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, nobody really has anything against him, but he's not going to be on a lot of favorite
lists. He's not like most people's favorite wrestler.
Yeah.
I will say that watching him in the Del Rio match, I found, even at the time, as much as I liked the match, it felt, watching the Del Rio match, that the sport had passed him by a bit for me. Mm. In that, like, Del Rio's offense compared to his offense being, like, kind of springboard back elbows and stuff like that,
sure,
versus, like, stiff kicks to the face. Like,
yeah.
It just didn't feel like he was fitting in anymore there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he struggled with that for a long time. Even, like, look at when they split up from Edge and Christian and stuff and the Brood. And how long was it before he cut his hair and got rid of, like, the mesh T-shirt that he was wearing and stuff like that? I mean, I know Justin, whenever they do the Vintage Vault reviews, he hated that about the guy. Like, for so long, he was desperately in need of, like, an image change. And he just seemed to be slow to do all those things. So maybe he just was a guy that never was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
So, but he was in the right place for Chad's list at number 8, and I don't think anyone has qualms with that. I don't think anybody thinks that's a crazy pick, but, you know, number 8 is about as high as you'd expect him to go. So, so we got Aaron's number 8 as well. So, Ben, give us your number 8.
My number 8 is the legend killer, Randy Orton. Mm. I think he has not had a spectacular SummerSlam, but he's had a couple really good standout moments. I'm thinking of when he became the youngest world champion in WWE history, beating Chris Benoit in 2004 was a standout. 2006, his match with Hogan wasn't the greatest. It doesn't hold a candle to the Michaels match, but just the fact that he got to be in there with Hogan in kind of a, you know, icons of two generations matches, I think that counts. And then the moment we already discussed, his match with Christian, I thought was that feud was that feud was running alongside the Summer Punk stuff, but we forget how good a feud it was sometimes, so I think it's seriously recognized, and he's also got a big match coming up this year.
Yeah, I think I might be looking forward to that match more than anything else on the card, believe it or not, in 2016.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. 2016, Randy Orton, who would have thought?
Right, exactly. So, Chad, what do you think about Randy Orton?
I just don't care about Randy Orton.
there's my receipt for Christian.
Yeah. I considered him, and going through his resume, I don't think he has that many kind of glaring misses. I've never liked him and Sheamus matched up,
yeah, no.
which I always think is kind of weird because I like both of those guys with other opponents, but I never thought they worked well together. It may have been because I had to sit through that awful Royal Rumble 2010 match that they had with each other. But yeah, I've never liked them together. I didn't like the Taker. What was that? Sorry.
No, they've never worked well together.
Yeah, just
much like
something
Ben and I.
About that.
Yeah.
So Orton, I guess, kind of to wrap it up for me, was just sort of a lot of, okay, pretty good, but not good enough for my list.
Aaron, did he make your list?
No, not even close.
Okay.
Like, I'm of the mind too that I just don't care for the guy. Like, it's. He clearly has all the tools to be a great professional wrestler. Mm-hmm. His moves are crisp. He looks good. But it just never seems to translate into great matches for me.
Yeah, I agree.
The Christian match is great, but then you got the series with Cena, which I just find very boring. The difference between the match Hogan had with him versus Michaels is, like, how did Michaels get so much better a match out of Hogan? You know, yes, he was a year more broken down, but – and I don't know. Like, you're right about the Sheamus thing. Like, it's like both guys should work together, but it's almost like they phone it in when they work with each other, which is pretty – that's how I view Randy Orton. I feel he's always phoning it in.
No, I think that's a fair way to look at him. I think a lot of people view that. I think Randy Orton, one thing that isn't really his fault, but his career runs pretty parallel to John Cena. And, you know, say what you will about Cena, but he probably works circles around Randy Orton, you know.
Yeah, like if you look at them in direct competition for all those years, the number of great Cena matches versus the number of great Orton matches is just staggering.
Yeah.
And they've both had this – because some guys, you know, like when you look at a guy like Rick Martel, he never really had the opportunity to have great matches in the WWF, you mm-hmm. know? But Orton has had every opportunity.
Yeah, more than needed. So,
yeah,
I think Ben said it best. Gosh, it had to be a main event episode once. Randy Orton's the type of guy who, when he's gone – we're like, man, I wish Randy Orton would come back. And then when he comes back, we're like, man, I wish Randy Orton would leave. You know, it's like we as fans never really know what to do with the guy. You know, it's kind of like
I think the potential of Randy Orton is always more exciting than the reality of Randy Orton.
Yeah, it's all hype, you know, and no real substance, I guess. So
that said, I stand by my choice. I'm not going to back off on this one. I think at the time, the 2004 world title victory was a big deal.
Sure.
And I think the Christian match was good, and it wasn't solely because of Christian's work. The guy definitely has a lot of black marks on his record, but I think he has enough good ones that, you know, I'm not putting him at number three or something, but he settles in as my number eight.
And it's not really much of a match, but, I mean, he did end the SummerSlam 13 show with the heel turn with Triple H and the cash in on Bryan and stuff, which is pretty memorable as well.
And that led to so many good storylines and matches.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that night, lot of people were pretty emotional about it, I guess we should say. I wouldn't say excited, but, you know, it got a big response. So
Ben likes Randy Orton more than Kurt Angle.
I guess I do.
I just like that in Aaron's scientific rankings, he has 27 matches worse than Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam 2003. How bad do you have to be?
You gotta be the Undertaker versus the Undertaker.
That is some putrid stuff.
Well, we've had this argument with the WrestleMania match rankings. I mean, would you rather a bad match be 8 seconds long or
8 minutes? 8 seconds? I know. I don't disagree. But it's just funny to see that. A match with one move versus...
And it wasn't even Randy Orton's move. It was a pedigree. You know?
He basically covered a guy, and that's good enough to be better than a quarter of the matches or an eighth of the matches.
Let's give Orton some credit. I mean, all he had to do was cover Bryan, and Randy Orton could have had that last 3 minutes with the way he moves, you know, and he still managed to do it in under 30 seconds. So
could have put out a shoulder or something.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So good on him for getting done there. So, all right, there's our number eight. CM Punk, Christian, and Randy Orton are our number eights. Interesting how they are all kind of from the same time frame. So let's go on to our number sevens. And Aaron, since you didn't get to share your number eight there, since we started things off with yours, why don't you give us your number seven now?
My number seven is Shawn Michaels.
Oh, okay.
I would echo a lot of the things that Chad said about Shawn Michaels. I really love the ladder match, too. I think it probably is the best WWF ladder match. I think it was my number six match in SummerSlam, so I'm not too far behind him on that. I think with Michaels, it really kind of falls on how you feel about the Triple H match. Like, I like it, but I don't see it as a top, tippy-top tier match. So I think that's what brings him down a bit for me. I also quite like the Mr. Perfect match. I think it was extremely disappointing. But if you take that disappointment out, I think what they actually do is quite solid in the ring. Has a bad finish, But it's a decent match in my eyes, and I did enjoy it on rewatch. But the stuff against Legacy and the interminable match against the McMahons at 2006 is – it's why he can't be higher. Like, even though he has one of the best matches ever, and I love the Hogan match, I can't in good conscience put him above anybody else.
Wow. That's what the McMahons will do to you, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so we've already heard from Shad on that, and Ben, I'm guessing we're still going to wait a little while for you.
You know what? I'll do it now because I don't think it's going to be worth having the Shawn Michaels conversation three times over the course of the show.
Sure.
I have him at number 5.
Oh, wow. That's okay. Surprisingly low.
Yeah, well, you know, he is my father. but
oh man.
But my argument for putting him a little higher is I do think the Triple H match is to me it's a classic. I know it's divisive. I love it. I can watch it anytime and be super entertained by it. I agree that what everyone's saying about the ladder match, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for the Hogan match. So those are three big matches that I think he delivered in. I think the Vader match is good. I think a lot of the other stuff that Chad already brought up is good. So, you know, I'm always going to have Shawn Michaels pretty high. He is my favorite wrestler of all time. But in this case, I think I'm more justified than I've been in the past when I've ranked him very highly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he has a good string of – like it's not at all crazy to put him at that. And one more thing I'd like to mention about him that we didn't mention yet is I think he is – excellent as the ref in the main event of 97.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that dynamic of the three of them would not work nearly as well without him there. And the finish is such an amazing moment.
And for that matter, going back to the 2008 Jericho angle, you know, his selling of how enraged and upset he is what happens to his wife, I don't think could have been pulled off by a lot of lesser performers.
No. I agree. Yeah, if I had joined in with you guys on this list, funny enough, I probably would have had Shawn around where Ben had him, maybe even up at 4. You know, when I originally was thinking about my performance, Shawn was one of the first that came to mind because of, you know, his highs are about as high as anybody else. No pun intended there. Shawn 89 is about as high as he gets. So,
but you know what would help? You know what would help his case is if in that period of if he had a match in 2004, if he had a match in 2007.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Like, I don't remember what was going on then. Like, why was he hurt or what in 2004 and 2007?
I think he was taking time off. He had the cane injury in 2004, the one where Kane put him out of action. It was a kayfabe injury, though. I think he was just taking time off. I'm not sure why.
Just say it's a softball league.
It seemed odd. I will say, too, I didn't talk about the Triple H match. And generally, with matches, I'm not inside the ring, so I find it tough to say, well, somebody carried somebody else a lot of times, unless it's painfully obvious. But in the 2002 match, I do really like Shawn's performance in that match, and I do really despise Triple H's performance in that match, only because I think you have, like, the best story you could ever hope for with – I mean, this guy literally has a broken back and is coming back, and I didn't think Triple H was too intense or, you know, you had JR talking about how devious he was on the on commentary as he was arguing with – Earl Hebner and getting showed up by him and all that. So
I think he was a little gun shy. I think he was afraid to really go full speed. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Them two together, and this is another sidebar, but they have a weird, because in the Taboo Tuesday 2004 match, I'm the reverse. I really like Triple H's performance in that match and don't like HBK's, but it's kind of just the way they work together. But yeah, I have no problems with him at number 5. He just, he has just like little moments. Like, I don't like the way he showed up Hogan at the end of the 2005 match and the temper tantrum at Vader and just kind of those like little moments where I'm just kind of like, what a dick, you know?
Yeah. So.
number nine.
Yeah, when he's definitely not supposed to be. Yes.
Yeah.
Look, we're not voting him as best dad, okay? We're talking about wrestler here.
Some people might try to be. Speaking of which, Aaron, I'm going to assume your number seven is Iron Mike Rotundo. No.
Yes. Iron.
Iron Mike Rotundo.
Iron Mike Rotundo.
Yeah, well, you know, I just give him extra gimmicks when I feel like he needs more.
If somebody doesn't need more gimmicks, it's Mike Rotundo.
The Iron Captain Mike Rotundo. Oh, goodness.
Iron VK Rotundo. Yeah.
Well, that's what the I stands for in IRS.
Yeah.
Iron Arshyster. So. All right, let's keep going with our number sevens. Ben, why don't you give us yours?
My number seven is The Undertaker.
Okay. God just, damn it.
Despite being in the worst match of all time, had some... if you're looking at The Undertaker, first of all, you have to consider one thing. He's been around for forever. So he's got the tenure to be an all-time SummerSlam performer. And I give a lot of slack to guys who had been around for a long time and who had had a lot of matches. Mm-hmm. You throw out kind of the early portion of his career, which was not so great, especially when it came to SummerSlam. He seemed to have some of his worst matches at SummerSlam. But if you start in 96 with the Boiler Room Brawl, go into the Bret Hart match in 97, go into the Austin match in 98, and then just keep kind of rolling along, he's had a decent body of work. But honestly, the real reason he makes it this high for me is just, again, consistency, being on for as long as he's been on, and putting in some decent matches here and there.
Okay. Aaron, I got to go to you first based on that reaction.
I was like, as I was preparing, I was like, okay, I got to think about what other people are going to say, and so I have something to say. And I came to The Undertaker, and I was like, nah, no one's going to pick it. look, Undertaker versus Undertaker, Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez, Undertaker versus Kama.
Kamala.
Kane. it just goes on and on, and I just can't understand. Like, this is the streak that no one talks about. It's the streak of horrible SummerSlam matches from The Undertaker. He does have some highs. I do like the Austin match. I love the Bret Hart match. But Kamala's unforgivable. Just unforgivable. So, I don't have anything else. JBL in 2004. God, so, I don't... Sorry.
How big... Like, we do a top 10 list for Rank and File. How big would our list have to be for you to rank The Undertaker?
214. He killed Kanyon!
It's very true. The worst part of the Alliance, yeah.
Wow. Oh, God. I hate him.
All right, so he's one of Aaron's honorable mentions.
All right.
Chad, we've got...
Test? We forgot Test? Sorry.
You know, I don't think the Test match was that terrible, to be honest. Aaron just hung up on us. No. Chad, what do you think about The Undertaker?
I would like to talk about The Undertaker a little later.
Oh, come man. On, Chad.
I'm joking. I'm so joking. No, I wrote him down on my little spreadsheet, and then first thing I did was write out all their matches. Ooh, and sure. For Undertaker, I'll just read it verbatim. Versus Kamala, versus Gonzalez, versus Undertaker, versus Kama, no chance. That's all I wrote.
No chance.
We didn't even talk about A-Train.
Yeah, I couldn't get past it. I do believe he does have some really good to great matches later on, but so much jock. I just couldn't do it.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's just an interesting way to look at it. Ben kind of approaches it from the quantity. There's so much of it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, sometimes when there's so much of it, right, you're just bound to have some garbage.
The wrong perspective.
Yeah, I think these guys are making some good arguments, so it's as good a time as any for me to once again dig my heels in to stand by this argument.
That you like The Undertaker at SummerSlam more than Kurt Angle. We got
Kurt
it.
I think the argument you would make for Undertaker, though, is longevity. Those matches suck, but I
remember
mean, I don't think you remember Undertaker Kamala, you know, like for the most part. Mm. You know, whereas
you blocked it out of your head.
Well, good, you know. But I think we do remember Undertaker Austin, you know, and Undertaker Brett. So I think his good stuff is more memorable than his bad stuff is. So I think
I did not go back and watch every match like Aaron did. So yeah, I'm basically just thinking what were his highest highs, and I'm not thinking so much about his lowest lows.
Sure.
Is that a fair way to judge it? Maybe, maybe not. You can certainly have your critique of how I make my list, but you know, I still have my logic.
His highs are definitely as lows are low.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I mean that in a positive way. Like,
yeah. His highs are almost as high as almost anyone's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you go into this list saying I'm going to pick a guy that has some of the greatest SummerSlam matches ever, you could pick Undertaker.
Sure.
But,
yep. Sure. Well, Chad, who'd you pick in this spot?
I picked the Ultimate Warrior at number 7.
Yes.
This is turning into a real work rate
yes.
list.
Yes.
I had another guy I was shocked to write down on my pad, but I did. I think the Honky Tonk Man moment is
sure.
still like a top 10 awesome. Memorable SummerSlam moment. To this day, his match with Rude at SummerSlam 89, I think is excellent. To me, that's the best WWF match in 1989, period. The match versus Rude in 1990, I think it's good. It's not great or anything, but I don't think it's a resume like detractor. Match made in hell. Okay. That's the one kind of, that's the one kind yeah. of black spot on the list. But then he has the Savage match at the 92 SummerSlam, which while it's not as good as WrestleMania 7, it's a really different type of match. And for those two guys to go out there and wrestle for 28 minutes, yes, you have some of the ancillary stuff with Flair and Perfect, but that's a lot of time to ask those guys to wrestle, and I thought they had a really strong match.
Sure. Now, was he around? Did he have a match in 96?
No, he was at he left. He was supposed to be.
That's right.
Wasn't that
in July? He was got replaced. That's right.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
do we know what the plans would have been for him? They never get that far.
No, they kind of sort of after International Incident and sort of teetered out, and then they
yeah.
went a different
I mean,
way.
Well, he probably would have replaced
Sid. Up Bulldog. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think it may have been that, but
which would not have helped his ranking
no.
here.
Probably
it would have helped. It would have helped Davey Boy Smith's spine though, because that powerbomb takes from Sid. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I got some thoughts on Ultimate Warrior, but I'll let you guys chime in first. Ben, did Ultimate Warrior get on your list at all?
Ultimate Warrior is going to be a little further down the line for me.
Okay. How about you, Aaron?
Same thing.
Okay, cool. Then I'll save my thoughts for when we all get there. So maybe it's not as crazy as you thought it was, Chad, to rank him. So
I'm glad cool. I'm conservative on that. I was worried.
The PWO is just unfollowed.
Don't worry, Chad. We'll make you look good.
The collective of the PWO has just unfollowed Chad. So everyone. So my God. Anyways, let's go on to our number sixes. We're almost halfway through this list. We are cruising. And Aaron, why don't you kick off this one and give us your number six?
Sure. I'm positive I'll be the lowest on this guy. I if anybody else had him lower or not on the list, I'd be shocked. My number six is Bret Hart.
Okay.
I personally was never a huge fan of him when I was watching him at the time. I didn't care about the Canadian stuff. Like, I was actually cheering for Michaels in Montreal when he got screwed, which made the whole night very weird afterwards.
Wow.
But I think his highs are
very... Were you there, by the way?
Yes, I was.
Oh, cool.
I never knew that.
Yeah, it's... It's weird. It was a weird, weird night. We can talk about it sometime.
Yeah.
I think his match with Bulldog is amazing. The fifth. It was my number five of all time. I love the match with The Undertaker. Like, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but there's something about the chemistry of those three guys that just – like, Bret was just so good at carrying the pace of that match, and he was great as the heel. His match with Perfect is wonderful. His tag match with the Brainbusters was great. I'm not super high on the cage match. I like it, but it's kind of middle of the pack. for me, what kind of brings him down is I really am not a huge fan of his the tag work with against Demolition.
Okay.
Both of those matches for me don't quite work. The Yankum match hurts him. I like the Lawler Doink stuff. It's not like I dislike his work. It's just I think there's guys that are better than him, which I know is shocking because everybody thinks of Bret Hart as Mr. SummerSlam. But for me, he's Mr. Number 6.
All right. Chad, Ben, are we going to talk about him later?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. So, all right. Well, that finishes up Aaron's top half of the list. So let's finish off Chad's. Give us your number 6.
My number 6 is someone that Aaron mentioned as his honorable mention. And that's Steve Austin.
Okay.
He does only have the 4 matches, but my God, look at the 4 matches he has. The Owen Hart match at SummerSlam 97, I adore that match because I actually think, I mean, it's unfortunate he broke his neck, of course, but up to that point, that match has wrestled in a really interesting technical kind of NWA world title style match. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's kind of the last glimpse of stunning Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. Once he came back from that, you see the brawling Austin, even later on, like the stuff versus Angle. It's a different type style he wrestles. Mm-hmm. You have the match with Undertaker at SummerSlam 98, which I'm actually not that high on as a match, but I did kind of involve the angle that surrounded it, which
is a spectacle.
Which I enjoyed the hype and kind of the highway to hell is so memorable, that stage setup, the music and everything. The three-way from 1999, I actually think that's a good match. I mean, you know, not great or anything, but very good, very solid. And then the angle match from 2001 was one I wanted to watch before I compiled my list, and I think that match is absolutely excellent. Another top 10 match in SummerSlam history. So he had 4 matches in SummerSlam, and in my opinion, the worst one's actually versus The Undertaker, and I still had it as a good match. So he had 4 at least good matches and 2 great ones, so that's why he was my number 6.
You like that triple threat more than the Undertaker match, right?
Yeah, I like the triple threat pretty good, actually. I thought they did I do really like Triple H's rise in 1999 when I watched 1999 chronologically. I thought Triple H's – I wish they would have just done a singles match between them two and just screwed Jesse and had Triple H win. But I like the rise with them two, and I still at the SummerSlam point in time, it felt like Austin versus Triple H felt like a money pairing, and Foley was kind of just there. But I don't think it's a spectacular match, but, you know, star rating wise, it's about a 3.25 match for me.
Jordan, just in the interest of not repeating arguments later on, I'm just going to say Austin is my number 3.
Okay.
But really for no, like Chad already illuminated every point I would make, and I would probably just stress them harder. Just at how good the matches were, sure, how memorable the moments were, how big the spectacle was. So I had pretty much the same thoughts that Chad had that he already articulated much better than I could, but I had him at number 3.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at each of the 4 matches, I think you can find something different. And I mean, the Undertaker match is probably the biggest match that he had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the triple threat, it was kind of not the fall, because I mean he was still around for a couple more years. But you know, from that peak of 98 to the next year, we see how beat up and hobbled he was. One thing I've always wondered, and maybe he's discussed this or someone else has, and I just don't know about it, is how that Owen match would have ended. I'm obviously not saying who would have won. It's obvious he would have won, but I wonder what the plan was. How much longer?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Probably a stunner.
But I almost think that the accidental injury makes it better than, you know, he just hits him with a stunner, you know?
Yeah.
Like the guy.
Well, it's definitely more memorable.
Yeah, you know, the match where Steve Austin broke his neck. I mean, of course, the roll up looks really, really weak.
But right.
He has a broken neck, you know?
Right.
So I think that just adds to the legacy of it. So, Steve Austin is definitely a good choice and maybe a good argument for quality over quantity if there ever was a better example. I'm not sure if there is one. So, cool. All right. Well, then, Ben, that's your number three. How about you finish off our top half of the list and give us your number six, and then we can go.
Sure. I had another guy who, for me, it's about longevity, but then paired with some really, really good matches in recent years. It's kind of had a resurgence, and that's John Cena. I put him down here. I would look at his Punk match, his Lesnar match, his Daniel Bryan match. Those three matches right there should be enough to kind of build a resume. But then you look at some of his older stuff. I had a good match with Booker T in 04, had a good match with Jericho in 05, good match with Edge in 06. The Orton series hurts him, like these guys have already said. But I think when you look at the sheer number of matches there, he's got enough good matches that he deserves to be in the discussion for this part of the list.
Sure. Yeah, that Lesnar match, I watched it again maybe 2 months ago. It's still just so different than than anything that I've
seen. That he was willing to go out and do that, I think, speaks volumes.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to rate that match. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is. Chad, what do you have that match rated?
I ended up 4 stars, but on the Voices of Wrestling, like Match of the Year, year end, like you only pick 10 matches. Mm-hmm. So, like, I probably had, you know, 20 or 30 matches I ranked higher than that one. Mm-hmm. But I put that match in my top 10 because it was so just, like, different and memorable.
Yeah.
Like, I just created a spot for it and kind of shoehorned it in. It's kind of what I'm going to do with Final Deletion this year. So it's in the same category.
Awesome. So you got John Cena coming up on your list? Do you want to talk about him now or what?
Yeah, I'll have him coming up.
Okay, how about you, Aaron? Same thing?
Yeah, me too, coming up.
All right, cool. So we know some of the guys we'll be talking about a little bit later, but that's the top half of our list, our number 10 through our number 6. So why don't you sit back and listen to these brand new commercials and listen to what's going on at Place to Be Nation. Guys, we are going to go watch some Iron Mike Rotundo matches in the break and come back and revisit our list, figure out how we can get him to number 1.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzuto here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Friscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to Rank and File. We are talking about the greatest SummerSlam performers in history with 2016 coming up pretty soon. We're going to see if any of the current roster can maybe make their mark and be on a future list of Rank and File. Guys, do you think there's anyone out there right now who is not on your list that you think maybe if we were to revisit this 3-4 years down the road would have a shot at cracking the list? How about you, Aaron? Who do you think?
Fandango.
Exactly. All right. I meant besides him, of course.
Oh, okay. You didn't want the obvious pick. I would probably Seth Rollins, I think.
Okay.
I think he's the obvious one, but it's one.
Yeah, he is the obvious one.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin, I mean, like that little patch, right? Like that Cesaro, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn.
Sure.
I think Rollins is the standout there just because I think he's going to have more of an opportunity to have big matches over the next few years.
Sure.
Those guys are going to be, you know, kind of fighting on the undercard, fairly or unfairly. He's going to have the opportunities.
Chad. And he already has a couple of – oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. He already has a couple of really good matches on there.
Yeah, he does. He does. Chad, do you disagree?
I'm just shocked. Another discussion about the modern product turned into Ben lip servicing Rollins. I can't believe it.
I was waiting for that.
If Shawn Michaels is his dad, I think Seth Rollins is his his stepdad. Yeah.
I thought maybe they could do. Speaking of dads, I thought maybe they could do a cool angle where they bring in Seth Rollins' dad, Henry. To fuel them, so. I really reached for that one. I apologize. So, all right, here's a question.
Should have just let Aaron run with that and stayed quiet.
Yeah, I should have. Before we get back into our list, Chad got me thinking about it because he was mentioning, you know, his top five, stuff like that. What's your top SummerSlam match of all time?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me first so I can say it first, and then Aaron can repeat my answer, and it'll sound like he's just following me. My top SummerSlam match of all time is John Cena versus Daniel Bryan, and my number two is CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar.
Aaron, same thing?
This is going to come to a surprise for you guys, but my top match is John Cena versus Daniel Bryan, and my number two is CM Punk versus Brock Lesnar.
Man, well, that is out of the box thinking right there.
Yep. Thanks, Chad.
Is there a parrot on the line?
Ben, how about you? What's your all-time favorite SummerSlam match?
What year was Orton Sheamus?
2010, 2012.
Yeah. No, I echo these guys what they said. Those are the best. I think I would throw some older matches in there for the sake of having completion. But yeah, I think those are the two best matches in SummerSlam history.
Yeah, I mean, really thinking about how Christian got ranked on the list, I mean, what a bad night to have one of the best matches of your career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say that's probably top 20 for me in SummerSlam history, that match.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just, I mean,
and it's
crazy.
A distant third on that show.
Yeah, I mean, John Cena versus Daniel Bryan is the last match, period, that I've ranked 5 stars. And we're 3 years removed from that.
Yeah, that was an awesome, awesome match.
So. Yeah. And it gets better. To me, that match gets better. But
I agree. I think that night, I probably would have ranked Punk and Lesnar higher.
Yeah. I actually did. Like, leaving the Buffalo Wild Wings that night, because that was right after the site launch, so there was a million messages flying around. But I knew I had Lesnar, Punk higher that night, and Bryan and Cena lower, and had both of them at 5 stars that night. And when I've rewatched it, I've flipped them, and Lesnar's Punk just lost like a little smidge to push it to the 4.75. The good arbitrary anal ranking.
Because at the time, you're upset that he lost.
Yeah. That's part of it.
I was going to make a joke, but I don't think I'm going to now. So let's just
thank you.
First time for everything.
Yeah, let's just get into our list before I really people from my church might be listening. I doubt it, but you know, I'll text it to you guys.
I've been passing out those flyers.
So, all right, let's kick things off with the top half of our list. Let's look at our number fives. I know Aaron started our number 10, so let's keep that trend going. And Aaron, why don't you start us with your number five as well?
My number five is the People's Champion, The Rock.
Awesome.
Again, not a huge resume, but I think based on the strength of his awesome main event with Lesnar and his very good ladder match with Triple H, the rest of his stuff is good. His match with Booker is good. The three-way with Triple H and Angle is good. The Billy Gunn thing is best left forgotten. Yeah, but yeah. I think his resume is quite strong. He's a strong character, and he, at this event, delivered more often than not. Even the match, like, it doesn't really get remembered quite well, but it was a decent main event that followed an amazing Austin Angle match.
I think it suffered because it main evented when it probably shouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. All right. I'm thinking we may hear more on The Rock, but I don't know how much farther up on anybody's list he is. Ben, is he on your list? You want to talk
He actually was originally on my list and fell off. And I think upon rethinking, I maybe would have added him back on, but I just thought too many of his matches were good, not great. And even when Aaron was describing them now, that's kind of how I felt about it. I feel like his Lesnar match is fantastic. I enjoyed the ladder match in 98, but beyond that, the Booker match, yes, if you go back and rewatch it, you're not going to have any fault with it. It's a technically fine match, but I don't think it's the type that you remember 5-10 years later. Mm-hmm. And the Billy Gunn match, like Aaron said, not a great match. So he slipped off my list so I could get Randy Orton in there.
Good.
Yeah. Rock did not make Ben's list because too many of his matches were good, not great. Undertaker made the list.
Yeah.
Oh, in Ben's defense, he did say, basically, if you start in 1996 with The Undertaker.
You cut out half his career. It's...
Yeah.
So, Chad, how about you? You got The Rock anywhere on your list?
The Rock was number 12 for me. Okay. I just think it's cool to be contrarian and pick people over The Rock. When I was looking at The Rock, I think I really unfairly judged the Billy Gunn match.
Yeah.
Just because he has so few matches. Like, he only has five matches. It's just like, if one of your five is Billy Gunn, it's like, oh, I really hated that match. So, I don't know. I agree he has two very good matches, but the middle three, they're all middling to bad. So.
See, The Rock for me is like I think I told you guys like I kind of just picked it based on my match ranking still, right?
Right.
So like if I had just picked, I can't imagine he would be on my list. Like, he was the one who kind of surprised me the most, and that's why I kind of left him there. I just thought it was an interesting pick.
And what's funny about that is he's the guy that I probably would have went out of my way to put on my list even if he didn't quite deserve it. Because like Chad said, he likes to be contrarian, and I love to be the contrarian. I know that's surprising to a lot of people, but
what? But
with The Rock, I'm like the total opposite of he's probably one of my two or three favorites of all time, and I will always just look at him through the rosiest of rose-colored glasses. So he definitely would have been on my list, and I probably would have had him probably higher than I should have. But so I'm fine with him on number five on Aaron's list. So. I think a lot of people I think that Booker match left a sour taste in people's mouth because it came after that great, great Austin Angle match.
Yeah.
And because Rock won, too. You know, it kind of cut Booker's legs out from underneath him, a lot of people.
Yeah. I think if the Invasion pay-per-view didn't tell you where things were headed, that was kind of the final stamp.
Yeah, that definitely.
This is what's happening, guys.
Rock is WCW champion.
Right.
I mean, it did give us the Rock-Jericho feud. You know, for the WCW title. So, and those matches were really, really awesome. So, I'm not going to complain there. But, okay, so I would have had The Rock on there. and Ben and Chad were wrong. So good to know. Okay. So, Ben, why don't you give us your number five?
I already did. It was Shawn Michaels.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, my bad. Chad, why don't you give us your number five?
My number five is Kurt Angle. Another guy I'm not crazy about on his overall career, but I think he was really good at SummerSlam. I watched the Brock Lesnar match today, actually, and I hate their Iron Man match. Just loathe it. And their WrestleMania match, I think, is very good, but probably not as good as some do. But I think with those two matches, I still kind of have a podcast PTSD from arguing about them with Stephen Graham when we did the top 100 matches to see before you die. So I kind of wasn't looking forward to watching this one, but I thought it was a great match. I really enjoyed the match at SummerSlam versus Brock and thought it was tremendous. And you add that to the Austin and Ray match, which I already adore, and then even the Eddie match at 2004, which I kind of I do disagree with you, Jordan, and like the WrestleMania match better, but I think they're close. I mean, I think it's like, you know, 4 stars, 3 3/4, you know, like a little, very little variance between those. I mean, the Eugene stuff is what it is, but it was a squash at least, so yeah. There is that. Yeah. That's kind of a silver lining. So
yeah.
You know, a couple things with Angle that come to my mind when I think of his matches is, one, I know a lot of people didn't like the finish of the Austin match. What do you guys think of that? Since it was it a DQ, correct?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that? You think it's fine?
Didn't bother me that much.
Yeah, no problem with it. I think the problem with that is, for some reason, their Unforgiven match, which, you know, was in Pittsburgh and was Angle's big moment, it just couldn't reach the intensity or kind of build off of that. So in retrospect, it feels like, you know, this was their classic match and they kind of blew the finish. But I do think it set up the storyline well to where they could have had the blow off at Unforgiven, and it just didn't quite pay off.
Yeah. I think that's an example of people being outraged in the moment, but time kind of shows we were outraged over nothing, so to speak.
Yeah. I think the problem with the DQ finish isn't the DQ finish, it's how they did it. Like, it's if you remember, like, he knocks out, like, 3-4 refs, and then Nick Patrick casually walks in and DQs him.
Just DQs him, yeah.
And I do think, though, there's a moment where Austin picks him up after something, and he goes to – and Angle's just beaten and bloodied. And he kicks him in the stomach. And Angle reverses it into the Angle Slam. If he had hit the pin there – I think we're probably looking at the best match and one of the best, maybe the best match in SummerSlam history, because the crowd was so rabid for it.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think that's a good argument. I don't think that the DQ finish itself was bad booking, but had Angle won there, I think.
Oh.
Gosh, it would have come unglued. So,
yeah.
The other thing I would think is, you know, we talked about with Owen and Austin, and had the injury not happened, how would that have finished? You know, he knocked himself out pretty legit in 2000. Kurt Angle did in that triple threat match. And I wonder how things would have worked out there had he not – he was out on his feet for sure. So,
yeah. That's another one, too, where the storyline, like, going into the build, much like 98 with Austin and Taker, which is kind of interesting because Taker got the concussion in the 98 match, too. But
I thought Austin had the concussion in the 98 match.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, Austin, my bad. It's Austin with a concussion in the 98 match, but both kind of that hindered the match, the legit injury, both of those matches. But I love the storylines going in, so.
All right, so I know Ben already ranked Kurt Angle, correct? That was your number 9?
Yeah, and I'm regretting it. It's so many other things I've done.
Aaron, I know you mentioned we'd be talking about him later. Do you want to talk about him now, or you want to wait a little bit?
Look, I'll just be echoing everybody. He's my number 2.
Okay.
Okay? Cool. And I will just say that I have a real sick love for that Eugene match. Something about him beating that man within an inch of his life. And it's so, like, it's funny because Triple H had the same match with Eugene the year before, and I loathe it. Because at that time, Eugene was kind of, look, I don't think he could have been a main eventer, but they just kind of killed him dead, right?
Yeah.
But by 2005, like, this guy was parading around with Angle's medals, and I just wanted to see him get hurt, and he did. And so to me, it's just it's not as great as the other matches. Like, I'd put the Guerrero, Lesnar, Mysterio, and Austin matches ahead of it, but I have no issue with it. I could watch it right now and be very happy.
All right. Well, that's the second or third time Eugene's been mentioned. I wonder if that's a little foreshadowing for some of our lists. Mm. Might have some Nick Dinsmore loves coming up. So, all right. So Kurt Angle, we know he's Aaron's number two, so we know how many points he's going to wind up with, which helps me out while you guys talk. I can do some adding. So let's keep our number fives rolling and finish things off. Well, we did just finish our number five. That's right, because Ben's was Shawn Michaels and Chad's was Kurt Angle. So let's go to our number fours. And Ben, why don't you start us off here?
This is where I have Brock Lesnar. Okay. Could definitely make an argument for him to be higher, but for me, it's, you know, a lot of Brock Lesnar's matches are not enough in the rear view yet for me to say they're to judge the same way I would a match that's 10 years old, 20 years old. But if you look at what he's done in SummerSlam, he's not had a bad match. He had the classic against The Rock. Mm-hmm. He had a classic against Cena. He had a classic against Angle. He had a classic against Punk. The guy didn't have bad matches. Aaron can tell me how many he had overall, because I know he was keeping track of that stuff. But I think even though
he's had six.
Six matches, and all good. I think, you know, he definitely deserves to be this high. The three guys I have ahead of him, I have arguments for why I put each of them in my top three. He just lands just outside my top three.
Okay. Guys, do we want to talk about Brock Lesnar now? Do we want to wait a bit? I mean, there's not a whole lot more time to wait because we're in our number fours, so.
Yeah, I'll talk about Brock now. He's my number three.
Okay.
Brock is one Triple H performance away from being my number one.
No, yeah, there it is. That's the one I forgot.
I think his resume is really a murderer's row. I mean, versus Rock, versus Angle, versus Punk, versus Cena, versus The Undertaker last year, a match that I was dreading going
Everybody
into.
Was. Yeah.
I mean, just was like, please. I mean, as great as the moment being there live at WrestleMania 30 was, I mean, that match is not good. Which, again, you know, legit injury or not, I just didn't think they had it in them. And the fact that that SummerSlam match was great was such a surprise. And really, you know, we talked about kind of in the future who could be in our list. But, I mean, if he – and I'm very excited about the Randy Orton match too, which is another surprise. And if that match turns out great, I'm going to be seriously considering him for my number one spot, like if we did this list next year. I just think he's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, how much can we sing his praises? Aaron, sing some more.
I gotta talk about him later.
Okay, cool.
Sorry.
That's totally fine, that's good.
Cool. And I will sing his praises.
All right. I hope you legitimately sing it. So start thinking of some lyrics now. So, we'll give you some time to think. And Chad, give us your number four.
My number four is where I went with CM Punk.
Oh, okay.
Now he was somebody that I did not expect to be that high. I mean, he had the Brock match and he had the Cena match. And in my mind, I was like, well, he's got those two matches. And I really thought actually a lot of crap. And then I went back and rewatched stuff. And the Morrison match he has is, you know, good for a 7-minute match. I actually like the JBL match a good bit. Again, not a classic, but I thought that was a really good, solid match. I watched the TLC with Jeff Hardy today. I think that is excellent. I was really surprised at how much I love that match. I was out on WWE at that point in time in 2009. So I know I'd seen that match before, but hadn't paid much attention to it, and really was kind of blown away watching that today. The Straight Edge Society stuff versus Big Show is garbage. So that's a blemish for him. Versus Cena, I mean, you know, Money in the Bank is the classic match, but it's almost like, well, how much do you really punish this match? And that, you know, if I have the Money in the Bank, like I have the Money in the Bank match ranked 4.75 stars, I have the SummerSlam match at 4.25. So, yeah, it's the lesser of the two matches, but it's still really great, you know, and I think that gets overshadowed at a certain point in time. And then I also watched the Cena and Big Show three-way today, which I knew Aaron crapped on about an hour ago. And I liked that match. Wow. I don't know. I thought it was good. I liked how they kind of, him and Cena had to team up to bounce off a Big Show. It was kind of weird, and that Big Show being in there, I do agree, took away the heat from probably the pressing issue, which is really Cena and Punk and their chemistry together. But maybe it was just in the context of reading his resume as a whole, but I did think that kind of created a unique facet, and that now he was almost sort of juniorish in that match at points by doing like springboard double stomps and flying around, which I thought was interesting. So, yeah, he's my number four.
Yeah, I mean, what else can we say there? You know, that's we talked about Punk earlier, and I think you and I were kind of in the dark with WWE at the same time. You know, 2009-2008 is a period that I don't really remember watching at the time. I've gone back and watched it, but I was about as far out as I've ever gotten in that period. So, you know, the weekly stuff, I couldn't really tell you anything that happened.
No.
You know, so. But Punk's a guy, you know, I was just reading a thing about him not that long ago. There was a Morrison match that he had that he really, really loved, that he loved. Was it this match? Was it the SummerSlam match?
I wouldn't think it would be this one. I mean, this one was
did they have a Night of Champions match?
Oh,
it did.
Okay.
I think that might be the one that he really loved.
Yeah.
You know, because I was reading about it, and he said that they had a couple matches that they really hated. And you know what? Actually, I think the SummerSlam match, not that they hated it, but they you said it was 7 minutes or so. They said
they
had no time.
Yeah, they had
no time, so they had to get everything in, and then there was another match. So made me wonder which one was which. So. So I guess there's a better Punk Morrison match out there somewhere. So.
Well, the Night of Champions one was the one where it was supposed to be Benoit.
Okay, that's probably not it then.
So I don't know. That one was kind of put together last minute.
Yeah, don't think that's the one.
You mean they didn't enjoy that night?
Best night of his life. So, all right, so that's Chad's number four. So, Aaron, give us your number four.
Okay, well, my number four is the guy who I would assume if you only took his, like, I looked at this differently. I decided to include all their matches in this kind of calculation I was doing.
Okay.
But if you just took his top five matches, he would outright win this thing for me. And he's the first guy I think of when I think of Mr. SummerSlam, and that's John Cena. I've never been a fan of this guy, like, for most of my wrestling viewing. But his high-end stuff is just so, so strong. Like, the Bryan match, the Punk match, the Lesnar match, even the Batista match, which I really quite enjoy. He gets brought down a bit by what we kind of talked about over time with the Orton. And even he's got the Booker T match in 2004 is kind of a bit of a slog. But his high-end stuff is, I would say it's better than anybody else's in the field we've talked about. So John Cena is my number four, and I'm unsure as to where to put his match with Rollins. Like, this is something I watched after the fact, but it's gotta be not super high, but at least a respectable match with Rollins. So John Cena number four, but like again, like I said, if we're just dealing with high end, he'd easily be my number one.
Okay. All right, and now we already heard from Ben on John Cena. So, Chad, do you want to talk about him now, or do you want to wait a little bit more?
I would still like to hold off.
All right, interesting. So things are starting to reveal themselves, gentlemen. Speaking of revealing themselves, that was a bad way to put that. Naked
We're
Midian
about
makes
Shawn
my
Michaels
list.
Again?
Naked Midian. No, what I was going to say is we've already heard a couple of your guys' number threes as we get into there. We already know that, Chad, you have Brock there, correct?
Correct.
And Ben, you have Steve Austin at your number three, correct?
Indeed.
Okay, so Aaron, why don't you just give us your number three as well?
My number three is the Ultimate Warrior.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
For all of the reasons that Chad brought up before, I mean, yeah, the Triangle of Terror match is not great. But I would argue the Honky Tonk Man moment is the quintessential SummerSlam moment.
Yep.
Like,
I'm
to
right
this
there
day.
With you, Aaron.
And it's the first one, like, you know, so and I think, you know, like the match, I don't want to get into another Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant argument, But the match is perfect for, again, what they're trying to accomplish. And it was built on, what, like a 16-month storyline of Honky Tonk Man being a jerk, right? So yeah. It just worked on every conceivable level. And the Rick Rude match is wonderful. Like, you know, to the people that point that the Warrior can't work, they haven't watched this match because I don't – viewing it, I certainly don't view it as a carry job by Rude. I think Warrior's more than holding his own. Both guys bust out moves we've never seen them do, including Rude hitting this disgusting pile driver on him where it looks like his neck just breaks. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the Savage match is good too, but he's just a guy that like delivered every time on the big stage. And it was just very clear at SummerSlam.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to address when you both said that we were going to talk about him later is how good is the Ultimate Warrior in delivering when it matters? Because the guy, by most accounts, was terrible. But look at his SummerSlam matches and his WrestleMania matches.
Yeah.
And they're great. You know, he's got so much good stuff in there. Now, Chad might disagree when I use the word great, but I also know that he has to be in one of the next couple of spots on Chad's list. So,
Well, it drives me crazy when – I remember during the Self-Destruction of the Warrior DVD hearing Ted DiBiase talk about how terrible he was, right? Now, I know Ted DiBiase was a great worker, but he does not have the great matches in WWF that Ultimate Warrior does.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even close. Like, Ted DiBiase's pay-per-view matches are pretty dreadful.
Well, I mean, I would put Warrior's three WrestleMania – I mean, there's a SummerSlam list, but look at his matches at WrestleMania 5, 6, and 7, which is Rude, Hogan, and Savage, and compare that with just about anybody's three-match stretch, and it's in the argument, you know? So,
and how satisfying is 12?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's
both
good.
Knees on his chest.
So, Chad, you've only got two names left. The Ultimate Warrior is one of them, correct?
No, he was my number 7.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he already had him.
Oh. Yeah, I think it's Ben.
Oh, it's Ben.
Yes.
Ben.
But I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you that Warrior overall is a – I mean, it's weird to think about, but, like, I mean, if you're making, like, a one disc – compilation of somebody. Yeah. Ultimate Warrior's like a great pick.
Yeah.
It's just beyond that. I mean, he has what, like 2-minute house show matches. It's a weird kind of paradigm.
Well, that's just it, right? Is that like he doesn't, I mean, he's got a couple, but like he doesn't really have stinkers. Like he's got like a couple, but like it's either squash or great.
Yeah. It's funny because I just finished watching this three-disc set, the Always Believe set, and there is only one disc of matches. It's one disc documentary, one disc of matches, one disc of interviews, and what you guys are describing is pretty much exactly what it was. You get a few classics and then just a bunch of squash matches, and it's just squash after squash after squash, but it's funny to hear you guys talk about that. He was my number two. I agree with Aaron wholeheartedly that the Honky Tonk Man squash is the quintessential SummerSlam moment. The Rude match is good. The Savage match is good. Both Rude matches are okay. Obviously, one is much better than the other. But yeah, to me, those moments have stood the test of time. That gives them a great weight, and that's a lot of what I thought about when I was making my list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the other thing, too, with the Honky Tonk moment is I was convinced as a kid that Brutus Beefcake was going to be the one to be the Honky Tonk Man. You know, that's what seemed to make sense. And when something makes sense and you don't get what makes sense, sometimes you kind of are like, well, that's stupid. And instead it was like, well, this is even better. This is way more awesome. You know, like when the Ultimate Warrior, that might be the first example of a theme music hitting and people going nuts, like yes, like the surprise theme music. I mean, it really is. You know, we're 20 something. How many? 25, 26 years.
Almost 30 years.
Yeah, and it's still one of the best moments of SummerSlam history. You know,
almost a Chad Campbell away.
So it's really cool to see the Ultimate Warrior get some love on this list because he's a guy that probably would make a lot of worst of lists. lists by people.
I think as history goes on, he's making less and less worst of lists. Yeah. I think he's been kind of re-examined, and it's interesting to see how wrestling fans' relationship with him has really changed. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of factors in that. Nostalgia.
Sure.
Death. All sorts of stuff, but I think he's really a different case has been made for him over the last 2 or 3 years.
And I do think that it helps him that he went away for so long. I mean, if Warrior had stuck around, we would probably have a Warrior 92 match to talk about, yep. '93, '94.
Yeah,
and he might be the guy fighting Kamala and Kama, you know?
Yeah, we saw his output in '98. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
doesn't count, though.
Exactly. So the lesser the better, and he delivered with what he gave us. So Warrior finishes with a good amount of points, so we'll see if anybody can beat him. So, guys, I'm all over the place with the list because we talk about our threes, our twos. Anybody still got a three to reveal here? We've all said them, correct? So that was Aaron's. Okay, so let's get to our number twos, and that was Ben's number two. So, Chad, why don't you give us your number two?
My number two is Bret Hart.
Okay.
I think he's kind of the consensus, choice that when people think of Mr. SummerSlam, they think of Bret Hart. I think his kind of resume speaks for itself. I will say that kind of my differing views from most people is I don't really like the Taker match at SummerSlam 97 all that much. I like the One Night Only match a lot more. But kind of contrast to that is I absolutely adore the Doink and Jerry Lawler stuff at SummerSlam 93. I think that was just kind of brilliant storytelling. I think the thing with the Owen match to me is honestly one of the most interesting matches to analyze, because I think there's so many astute points that can be made, and I still don't quite know where I land on it as far as the psychology of the cage overall. I understand, like, Owen Hart, like, wanting to run and kind of escape the cage. I'm kind of less forgiving of Bret wanting to do that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's kind of the way a WWF cage is structured at that point in time. So it's almost like you either accept it or, you know, it's going to be a blemish for you. I don't want to stomp on Ben's points, as I think he'll be coming up pretty soon on his list. But, yeah, Bret Hart, number two.
Okay, cool. And we already heard from Aaron there. So, Aaron, instead of talking about Bret, why don't you you just told us your number two, didn't you? Or was that Ben? Gosh, I am so confused right now, guys.
My number two is Angle.
Okay, that's right. All right, so Ben, give us your next list.
My number two was Warrior.
Oh, my gosh, what is wrong with you? So, guys, are we just down to our number ones at this point?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you know what's interesting is I know what Chad's is because he's deferred a couple times.
Yeah, we're going to have three different number ones here.
I think we are. So, yeah. Chad, I think we know which one yours is, so why don't you tell us?
So my number one is John Cena. I think I'll go through the resume here. So Booker match, nothing. I mean, it's not bad. It's not good. It's what it is. The Jericho match, I think, is really, really good. I'll actually lump in the next 3 years together. I really enjoy the Jericho match, the Edge match, and I really like that Orton match from 2007. I think all three are interesting. I think they show the facets of Cena getting booed in most of them with the crowd reaction, but still being able to deliver a strong match, which I think is without a doubt been his strongest kind of attribute as a performer throughout his WWE career. The match versus Batista seems pretty polarizing, but for a first-time match, I had no problem with it. They kind of do work it like a super, you know, Street Fighter II arcade-style match with a lot of, you know, a lot of bombs back and forth, not a lot of psychology. But I kind of like that in, like, a Dream Match 5. I sort of liken that match to the Super Brawl 1 tag between Sting and Luger and the Steiners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of felt like that face versus face, the two, you know, powerful forces going after each other. I watched the Randy Orton 2009 match today. That is a match that the finish has a lot of overbooking to it. A lot of overbooking. But it worked for me, and the crowd heat was insane for that match. I couldn't believe it. I really liked the work that they did, and even I couldn't remember. Again, this was my dark period in WWE. So at the end of that match, a fan, quote-unquote fan, runs in and attacks the referee. And the way they filmed it, you know, I mean, WWE, it's pretty easy a lot of times to think what's real and what's, you know, not kind of above board. But when this happened, when this fan ran in, I messaged Brad, and I was like, I messaged Brad and Justin, was like, was that real or who was that? Like, I got worked at the match. I couldn't remember it. So I kind of liked, you know, for an overbooking finish, which is never going to be my favorite type of finish, I thought that was well done. The Nexus,
making a great late case for Randy Orton here, by the way.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking now that probably Orton maybe should have snuck in my number 10. I don't feel too bad about missing Edge out, but I'll keep my list. And then I think the rest of the matches have been sort of spoken on with the Nexus, Punk, the three-way, which I may be the only person in the world that likes it, but I do. The Bryan match, my favorite SummerSlam match of all time. The Brock match, which is one of the most memorable SummerSlam matches of all time. And the Rollins match last year, which was really good. And Cena's another guy. You know, this year he's got AJ Styles, and they had a house show about a month ago now from MSG. And if they mimic that match, again, another guy that, I mean, that's only going to add to his resume with 2016.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a guy who he's got the quality and he's got the quantity. So, I mean, how can you really argue with it, you know?
Yes, thank you for making that argument, because that was another thing. Like I said at the beginning, I thought that most people either had very short, you know, peaks,
like Austin,
or kind of or some consistent, but a lot of kind of block, you know, like Edge's stuff. It's not bad, but it's not, you know, great. And I thought a lot of Cena stuff actually was very good to great.
Okay, awesome. All right, so there's one of our number ones. Let's go with Ben's number one, because I think we know which one that is. I think I do, at least.
Sure. Chad already said he's the consensus pick, so that makes sense for me to pick him, and that's Bret Hart. And I think my argument for Bret is just no holes in the game. As Cena had a great back half of SummerSlam history, Bret really did well on the front half of SummerSlam history. I think his tag matches with Neidhart were pretty decent. I think they weren't, you know, all-time classic stuff, but they were good enough to get him on the list. I don't think we talked nearly enough about his match with Mr. Perfect in 1991, which makes a lot of compilations on how good it is and how intense it is, and that victory, Perfect has a lot to do with it, but Bret does a great job too. The Davey Boy match speaks for itself. It's a classic. I'm with Chad on loving the Doink and Lawler stuff in 93. Yeah, I think the 94 cage match with Owen, as Chad was talking about it, I think it's very different. I want to give it points for being a very different kind of cage match. I don't think you're going to see another cage match worked quite in the same way that they did. I don't think the Isaac Yankum match in 95 drags him down too much. He still manages to get a decent thing going there. Skip 96, go to 97. I love the Undertaker match. I love Bret just totally turning on what he's been doing for the last few years and playing the douche heel perfectly, and just his aggression is great. And that carries him out with a strong legacy. I think he's just a solid all-around SummerSlam performer who's had a lot of classic matches, and I don't think he had any holes in his game.
Honestly, maybe his worst match was the Nexus match, which, you know, like, I mean, you can't really hold that against him, you know? I mean, I don't think you think of that when you think of Bret Hart, so.
No, not at all.
You forget he's in it.
Right, exactly. And the only reason I thought of it is because Chad mentioned it when he was talking about Cena, you know? So it was in my brain, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what's interesting, I think, as we sit here and talk about this, usually when I do these countdowns and stuff, when I get off the show, there's something that I want to watch. And I think I want to watch the Owen Cage match probably the most, because I really, really loved it. And to hear you guys maybe poke some holes at it, I'd like to go back and watch it and maybe see if I see those, or maybe if I just gloss over those and say, yeah, they're there, but they don't draw anything away from my enjoyment of it, because I really loved that match for a long time.
So did I. Like, mm-hmm. I loved it forever. And then on rewatch, the only thing I found was that I found that they went on just too long.
Mm-hmm. It was a long match. And I think that's some of maybe an argument against Brett in that time period, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think something Chad said that I'd like to look out for as I watch it again is, you know, Owen trying to escape frantically makes sense, but Brett does not. So I'll have to watch for that, you know, because I don't remember that so much. But, you know, I'm sure it's there. So since you said you just watched, did you say you watched that one today, Chad?
No, I didn't. I haven't watched that one. It's been fairly recent. Yeah. It was when I was going through the 94 stuff chronologically. I think it's a very, I just love talking about that match, actually, because it's one where I think, you know, somebody could have it at like 4 3/4, or even, you know, for a time, a lot of people would say, oh, I like it better than the WrestleMania 10 match.
I used to say that, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's an argument where now I'm kind of like, I don't know. But like for myself, I still think the cage match at SummerSlam 94 is a great match, but it's a flawed match in my eyes. It's a weird kind of... just a lot of stuff going on in my brain when I watch that match of where, like, oh, this doesn't make sense, but the work's really good, and I like the Jim Neidhart aspect, and it's still a great feud, and just kind of a lot of opposing forces going at each other.
Sure. Yeah, but Brett at number one is a really solid choice, which just leaves us with Aaron. So, Aaron, before you reveal it, was this guy your number one from your scientific list as well last year, or have you deviated?
Well, I didn't really rank the wrestlers. I only ranked the shows, right?
Oh, that's right. Correct. My bad. Because you ranked the matches.
I mean, this guy is the only guy who had 3 of the top 10 matches, the only, along with John Cena. Mm-hmm. It's just he doesn't have the lows of John Cena, and that's Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. We talked about him earlier, but like when we talk about someone having no holes in his game, there's no one who personifies that more than Lesnar. Mm-hmm. Like, I think his worst match is the one with Triple H, and this is coming from someone who really hates Triple H. I don't think it's that bad a match. It's a bit self-indulgent, but it's nowhere near as bad as their WrestleMania match or even the cage match I didn't really love. But, yeah, his highs are just so high. His match with Punk is so good. The match with Cena is so weird and unique, and you'll never see anything like that again. And his match with Rock was just great. Like, it was a great sports build. His match with Taker was – like everybody else, I was like, oh, my God, I don't want to see this match. And I don't think it's a 5-star classic or anything, but I think it's damn good. And it was entertaining. And the image of him giving Taker the finger before passing out, like, it's such a nice cathartic moment. Yeah, and the match with Angle's great. Like, he's just got no holes. And, like – I can't think of anybody who, since his return, has been more synonymous with SummerSlam. Like, it's kind of his event now.
Yeah, I would agree there. I mean, even look at this year's match, you know?
Right.
What's funny is, had I made a list, I think Brock would have been my number one, because that's probably who popped in my mind immediately, which I think speaks to your argument that he's synonymous with SummerSlam. But what's funny is the argument I would have made was, even though I like the Punk match more and I like the Cena match more, I think the Taker match is the argument I would have used to defend him as my number one, because here's a match that I don't know anyone that was looking forward to that match. Even people who usually will find a way to go out of their way and say something good would be like, oh, well, yeah, that's there too. You know, like, they talk about the rest of the card. I don't know anyone that was anticipating that match.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not going to say it was the match of the year or anything. And like I said, it wasn't even the best Brock match. But, man, it really, really, really exceeded every expectation that anyone had, which I think just speaks – I mean, of course, you got to give credit to Taker. Like Chad mentioned earlier, we can't say who carried who or anything like that. But Brock's just so good in so many different ways.
Yeah, and I think there's an argument to be made that, like, obviously he doesn't have the wrestling – he doesn't have the huge catalog of matches, right?
Sure.
But if you to look at one guy in one performance, you could make an argument that he's one of the greatest people at being a professional wrestler ever. Like, his nuance in the Cena match Like, the way he laughs him off, and even how he laughed off The Undertaker. Like, I've never seen The Undertaker laugh at anything. Like, never. Yeah. Not even organically, right? Like,
right.
Like, and he's just so good with the tics. He's so good with, like, the way he moves and his body language. Like, he really is special. I think we shit on him sometimes because, like, he gets the privileges that no one else on the roster gets, but... There's something really amazing about Brock Lesnar, and we will miss it when he's gone.
Yeah. So, guys, what do you think? Do you think Brock versus Randy Orton is going to deliver? Because what's interesting is here's a guy who we were talking about how he always does deliver, and then Randy's the argument against him is kind of how we expect big things, and he doesn't. So, who's going to win out in this one? Ben, do you think it will deliver?
Oh yeah, I think it's definitely going to deliver. I think we're being a little too hard on Randy Orton. I maybe erred in putting him where I did on my list, but I think he's still a competent performer who can go out there, and if he's out there with a Brock Lesnar, he's going to have a great match.
Okay. Chad, same thing?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
So, hopeful. I also just fantasy booked SummerSlam 2012 to be the Cena versus Brock Extreme Rules match. Just move that to SummerSlam, and then it wouldn't even be a contest. You could have those two as the top two.
Right, yeah.
One last thing I'll mention, since we're on Brock, is that Brock-Cena match, which is so great for so many different reasons, the lone child who would not stop rooting for Cena throughout the entire match just makes it so much better, doesn't it? And you can just hear their hope fading. Their voice, but they wouldn't give up because that's what John Cena has taught them. And I heard that was actually Bill Simmons' kid.
It was. It was Bill Simmons' daughter. Okay.
So I'm even more glad that, you know,
that
her heart was broken that night. So.
By a monster.
Yeah, by Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar broke Bill Simmons' daughter's heart, which is why he deserves the number one ranking that he got. So, guys, as I tally up some points, is there any notable omissions? Any guys that you think, wow, how come none of us mentioned him?
I don't think so. I mean, on my short list, I had Mick Foley. Which I thought was kind of an interesting. Well, like I guess before we get to Foley, I guess we should mention nobody said Triple H.
Yeah.
And to me, just I mean some highs, but man, some lows. Yeah, I mean the match versus Booker, the McMahon fiasco, just a lot of stuff. Yeah, Great Khali. I don't really like his. I didn't like his Eugene match.
Nope.
Just not too much going on for me with him.
He so ruined the Elimination Chamber.
Oh gosh!
What a finish!
But I
thought Foley was interesting just because I do like the Boiler Room Brawl a good bit, and I do actually like the Triple H cage match.
That's a good match.
And also he has the Flair 2006 SummerSlam I Quit match, which I enjoy a ton too. So those three matches I kind of dig as under the radar SummerSlam picks. But then
match is that the one where China just ridiculously slams her?
Yeah, that's that one. So he was somebody just on the outside looking in for me.
I think a guy that like, wanted to be on the list but just doesn't have enough matches was Savage.
He doesn't have much.
No, and he's so synonymous with the early WrestleManias as being kind of the first Mr. WrestleMania, and then kind of nothing. Like he's got the two tag matches, then he fights Rhodes, and then Warrior.
The wedding.
Yeah, he got married.
Yeah, he gets married.
So, yeah, I mean, I think he maybe is a product of how wrestling was booked at the time, because even though SummerSlam was a big deal, WrestleMania is where you got the single matches, you know. First couple of SummerSlams were tag matches as the main events, you know, so. And that kind of maybe hinders, I don't want to say hinders, but prevents a match from being an all-time classic when it's a tag match that really is leading to a singles match down the road, so to speak. So.
Well, and it's interesting, like with Hogan, like I think what puts him on, at least what put him on my list, was the fact that he did come back.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whereas Savage never got that opportunity, so it's kind of a what if. Like,
it's kind of interesting that we didn't have Daniel Bryan, but again, it's just for one match. But whoa, that one match.
Yeah.
So that's
I did like his performance in the Nexus match. Yeah. But, you know, it was bits and pieces.
I was
sad with his kind of overall resume, though. I mean, he has Kane and just...
Yeah. So, one great match isn't enough.
How do you guys feel about the Barrett match? Like, I like that Barrett match. Like,
Barrett match is good. Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably his second strongest.
Yeah.
Pretty easily.
Where would you rank his Orton match? 2013.
Apparently not as bad as 30 other matches.
Not as bad as the Cat and Terry Reynolds.
The stink face. Well, you know how I feel about butt cheeks, as we learned, so that wouldn't be really high for me. I should have put the Cat number one.
All right, guys, it's time for me to reveal the overall scores, starting from number 10 all the way up to number 1. I've been keeping track, and I don't think I mentioned this at the beginning of the show because I just assume if you're listening, you've listened before. But if this is your first time, what we do is number 10 gets 1 point and number 9 gets 2 points all the way down. Number 1 gets 10 points. That's how we keep score. So a perfect score would be 30 if all three of us, all three of you guys put the same thing for number 1. So 30 is the most you can get. I think I've only had that one time on the show, and that was Ric Flair with the Royal Rumble performances, which was number 1992. So here we go. Coming to number 10, and there's a couple big jumps. Basically, this is 8 guys and then some leftovers. The number 10 entry is The Undertaker, coming in with 4 points.
Oh, God.
My God.
I love it. I love it so
much.
Good
for him.
Good for him, a guy who really a relative unknown in the wrestling world. You know,
he's going to be something someday.
Yeah, one day. Yeah. So, what's funny is when Ben listed The Undertaker, he didn't even list the Lesnar match as a reason for ranking him. Which is funny because, you know, it's the most recent and it's a pretty good match. So, he's number 10. Number 9 was The Rock with 6 points, a guy who I thought might wind up a little bit higher. And then we see a jump from number 9 to number 8. CM Punk came in at 8 with 11 points. Shawn Michaels with 12 points. Stone Cold Steve Austin with 13 points at number 6. That's the bottom half of our list. Number 5 is Kurt Angle with 17. Then we get into the 20s, and these are far and away the top 4. Number 4 is The Ultimate Warrior, 21 points overall. Number 3, John Cena, 22 points overall. Number 2, Bret Hart, 24, which means our number 1 overall with 25 out of 30 points, Brock Lesnar. Which I think is surprising. Like I said, going in, he probably would have been my number 1, but I didn't expect him to be the consensus number 1. But when we talk about him, it makes sense, doesn't it?
What a bunch of marks we are.
Yeah, right. Brock, Brett, and Cena. Top
got worked by Heyman here.
Yeah, we sure did. So, but, you know, I think everything we said makes sense about the guy. You know, I mean, he has not failed to deliver. He's got us pumped for a Randy Orton match. So he's doing something right. So, guys,
number 11, right?
What's that?
Randy Orton was number 11.
Let's see. I could tell you. Randy Orton and Christian tied for number 11.
Wow. Oh, how fitting.
Yeah, exactly. With 3 points each. So, this is probably the least varied list that I've had. Usually there's like all kinds of names, but this is one where, you know, your top 10 is almost everybody that was listed, and then there's only a couple other guys that even got mentioned. I could even tell you Orton, Christian, Jericho, Hogan, and Edge are the only other guys that got listed in the whole thing. So that's about how it goes. So we hope that you guys enjoy SummerSlam. If not, put on one of these guys' matches. You know, you say you don't hope they enjoy it.
Hope they hate it.
Hope they hate it. You know, I know somebody will enjoy it. So, Chad, I'd like to wish you an early happy 30th birthday. Welcome to this decade of your life.
40 minutes, baby. I'm about to go rage at the bar.
I can tell you I'm more than halfway through it, and it's been pretty good for me, so I do hope it's a good one for you as well. Aaron, how are you enjoying your 30s?
It's hell. Like, it's just hell. My knees are not the same.
And I got to say, guys, being friends with y'all on Facebook, it doesn't look too glorious.
I posted today about my daughter peeing all over the living
room. Yeah, taking dogs to the ER, daughter's sick, and Aaron's hair as a flock of seagulls.
At least he's got some hair, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I have a shaved head right now.
All right, so this has turned into a sad, sad ending to an otherwise eventful, fun evening.
Otherwise sad, sad podcast.
Yeah. So, in the meantime, we hope your summer's been great. So, guys, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for doing the legwork on this and putting together these lists. I think we pretty much hit the nail on the head. I mean, when you look at these top three, especially Brock, Brett, and Cena, I think those guys are SummerSlam names. Definitely. And even Warrior, too. You know, I think Warrior's got some big SummerSlam moments. I would think more Warrior's more linked with WrestleMania because of the Savage thing. But his SummerSlam resume is up there. So, for Ben Morse, for Chad Campbell, for Aaron George, and for, you know, we talked about him enough, for Brad, thanks for listening to Rank and File. Be sure to click on the Amazon link and help support Place to Be Nation. In the meantime, have fun.